Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Cesar Romero.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Ivy Podcast, the podcast for leaders, innovators, and entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Cesar Romero, and today we're going to be talking about launching a customer-led direct-to-consumer startup during the pandemic with Isabel Steichen, co-founder and CEO of Loopy. Isabel moved from Europe to the US in 2013. Her background is in operations, customer service, and business development, with founding teams for several early-stage VC-backed startups in the food and tech space, like Kitchen Surfing, Sawyer, and Voyage Control. She is a passionate, long-time vegan, certified in plant-based nutrition from E. Cornell, and the founder of the Plantiful podcast, and is now combining her startup background with her desire to spread plant-based eating through Loopy. She's been studying the lupini bean for the last 5 years and has developed close relationships with suppliers across Europe. Before we dive into today's episode, I want to ask you for a favor. If you find this episode valuable, please leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. Just search for Ivy Podcast or click the link in the show notes. This will really help us reach more listeners and expand our impact. Thank you so much for the support. And now let's dive right into the show. Isabel, thank you so much for being on the Ivy Podcast. I'm really excited to have you here and have you share your story on how you're building Loopy and what that entrepreneurial journey has been for you. So welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Cesar. I'm so excited to be here.
Absolutely. And to kick us off, I want to start with a question that I know people in the audience that might not be familiar with the lupini bean. And I wanted to ask you, what is the lupini bean and what exactly it does for your overall health?
Yeah, totally. I love talking about this ingredient because I'm fairly obsessed with it. Is an ingredient that's originally from Europe. It has a long agricultural and culinary history over there, and it's actually been consumed in the Mediterranean region, so Italy, Greece, Portugal, for a really long time, for centuries. And there's some very ancient tales around gladiators consuming lupini beans because they knew at the time, the ancient Romans, that they were so beneficial for your health and that they were so high in protein and were really good to build strength. And so they were giving them to gladiators. And that's just such a cool endorsement, right? I
mean, yes.
Gladiators were thriving on lupini, then we all will be. And so that's a little bit like the far background. Lupini is grown extensively all over Europe, and I grew up over there. I actually grew up in Luxembourg, and Luxembourg has a really large Portuguese and Italian community. So I knew of lupini because I had seen it around, and they often eat it in like a pickled version over there. So I kind of knew of it. And about 5 years ago, it came back onto my radar. I had moved to the States since, but I had been really immersing myself in the plant-based food space and researching different ingredients in a little bit of a nerdy way, and just became obsessed with lupini as I was uncovering all of these nutritional benefits. It's an incredibly powerful little bean. It has the highest concentration of plant-based protein among all beans, and that's kind of mind-blowing because for a long time people used to think that soy is like the powerhouse plant-based protein. It's a complete protein and has a really high concentration of protein, but lupini is even higher in protein, and it's also a complete protein. So for anyone who doesn't know about this, complete proteins are very rare in the plant-based space. One of the only ones is soy, and it means that it has a complete chain of amino acids. So it's really easy for the body to absorb, and that's not found very easily in plant-based foods. That's often more in meat and dairy and eggs. So for a plant-based source of protein to be complete and so high in protein, and then also super high in fiber, and naturally low in carbohydrates, it's just kind of checking all of these boxes. So Lupini is, you know, a gut healthy ingredient. It's really great for protein and fiber intake, and has a lot of environmental benefits as well that I would love to dive into. But that's kind of high level.
Wow, that's amazing. And I personally, I was not aware that lupini even existed until Courtney brought it up, you know, previous guest on Ivy podcast. And it's a super bean. Like I feel like if there's ever the food shortage, if you have a good supply of lupini beans, you can probably survive for a while there.
I would agree. A supply of lupini beans or lupi bars, for that matter, would
Exactly.
totally help you get through that for sure.
Exactly. Awesome. So let's go back into your background. Like, how did this idea come about? Right, because there, it's one thing to research the lupini bean, and it's a completely different thing to start a company based on the lupini bean. So, what was the journey like for you? Like, what were some of the high-level milestones that brought you to that aha moment?
Yeah, totally. So for context, I grew up in Europe, as I mentioned, and moved to the States in 2013. And I actually went to grad school for urban planning, so like city planning. So very related to food and beverage, right? But I worked in that space for about a year when I moved to New York, and then was very attracted by the startup space. I, you know, grew up in a culture that is, I would argue, less startup friendly and less entrepreneurial at nature. And so was very intrigued by what was happening here in New York City and the startup world, and applied for a job at this food startup in 2014. And I got the job, and I was employee number six, and we grew the company to like 30 plus and raised $20 million. And I was part of all of that, you know, roller coaster. And it was really wild, being in that environment, being so young, having so little experience. You know, I was a city planner. I had no experience in food, and here I was working with chefs and dealing with commissary kitchens and things like that. But I was learning so much on the job. And what I loved the most about it was being in this really early environment. I love, you know, taking an idea and a concept and creating something out of it that is tangible and real. And so I fell in love with the startup space and worked for various other startups, actually, mostly in the tech space after that. So I worked for a few software companies, also a lot of early stage businesses, and most recently was with a women-led software company called Sawyer. And I love that environment, but I also had been developing a real passion for plant-based food and plant-based eating. I personally transitioned to a vegan diet in 2013 when I moved to the States. I was a vegetarian before, very much against my family's opinion. You know, good Europeans eating a lot of cheese and all types of animals, which I always personally struggled with. You know, never really understood why we love some animals and we eat others. And so a plant-based diet was kind of more in line with my personal belief set. And as I was on that journey and eating plant-based and starting to cook and learning about all these products that were on the market here in the States, one thing that stood out to me was that protein was really important for American consumers when eating plant-based. There was real worry that protein wasn't of equal quality when it comes from plants. And at the same time, I found it super contradictory because of a lot of the protein options that I saw on the market of these meat replacements, dairy replacements, snacks were so processed. And they were all using this thing called protein isolate, which is when you strip the protein from the fiber and from all the other macronutrients and minerals and vitamins and isolate it. But in that process, you don't only lose the benefits of fiber and some other nutrients, but you also oftentimes chemically treated, and then that has residues left on it, and you're absorbing that. And I just was like, I don't want to eat that. There must be a way to get protein from a whole source. And that's kind of when I started researching ingredients and thinking about ideas, and quickly became obsessed, as I mentioned, with lupini, because I had seen it in Europe and I had seen it really explode in Europe over the last like 5 to 10 years, and was blown away by the versatility of the ingredient and the fact that you can use it in so many different applications, and it's really powerful, and you don't have to process it very much to get to all the nutritional benefits. So that's a little bit how the vision was born for Lupin, for creating this next generation of plant-based proteins.
Love it. And you, if I'm correct, you launched in 2 months before the pandemic hit. Is that correct?
Yes, we launched in January of 2020 with the bar. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's dive there. What was that launch process like? What were some of the things that led to it? Like, how do you decide on the flavor of the bar? Why bars? And all that. Like, where do you get your first customers?
Totally. So I will say, in that process, when I started thinking about Lupini beans, the initial concepts and ideas, I ended up leaving my last job in 2018, in fall of 2018, and I joined a startup studio called Human Ventures. And they very quickly became as obsessed with this concept around Lupini as I was, and were really interested in supporting me with the customer research, but also in investing in the business. And as I was working with them on customer research, looking at the market, looking at data, doing consumer interviews, we started narrowing down quickly that we wanted to launch in the snack space, because snacks are an ever-growing category and consumers are snacking more than ever, especially younger generations. And bars quickly became interesting to us for various reasons. One of them, consumers already know what bars are. And it's really important when you introduce a new ingredient that you do it in a format that consumers already understand. So usage occasions were known. And also bars have many usage occasions, except when it's a pandemic and people don't eat bars. But in general, you know, you eat a bar in the morning, maybe as a breakfast, as a quick breakfast on the go. It can be a pre or post workout meal. It can be an afternoon snack. It can be complimentary to a lunch. There's so many usage occasions. And then the other thing is, we saw a real potential opportunity to disrupt the bar category, because you have the animal-based bars that we know have been declining. And then you have the plant-based protein bars that are all using protein isolates and mostly soy and pea. And a lot of consumers are actually moving away from soy because of the GMO issues in the space. So we were like, oh my God, we can really deliver on the same nutritionals with this bean, but don't have to process it as much, and can keep the nutrition label pretty simple. So we did a bunch of research. We had 10 different flavors. We did a lot of consumer testing and feedback gathering, and ended up landing on the peanut, the almond, and the tahini one as our core flavors. And then later we added the cashew flavor last year in fall. So that was a little bit of the pre kind of work that we did. In 2019, also in 2019, and this is one of the most important things that happened, you know, when you ask about like kind of milestones and what things brought us there, is I found a co-founder, and I had been looking for a co-founder really actively. I had seen really great role models in my previous experiences working for startup founders. The most successful companies were led by co-founding teams with complementary skills and different backgrounds. And so I had gone on a quest to find a co-founder and had a spreadsheet going, met like 70 people. I had gotten to the point where I was like, when am I going to meet that person? And then Allie just popped into my life. And we really hit it off. And she was at an interesting point of her career where she was open and wanting to do something different. She had spent her career in food and beverage, and she's also plant-based. So she shares the same passion for this space, and she jumped in. And so we've been working on Lupi full-time since May of 2019, and spent a lot of that year really narrowing down the messaging, the consumer, you know, messaging, packaging design, getting the website ready for launch, scaling production, finding a co-packer. And then we launched in January of 2020. And had a retail first strategy. So very much going after independent retailers in New York. And I can talk a little bit more about that too, and how that went, and how the pandemic kind of, you know, made us totally change our plans.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll revisit that. But I wanted to ask you, since you mentioned co-founder, what are some of the things that you had on your list for a potential co-founder? You know, what were some of the things that you were looking for? And why do you think you hit it off
with Allie?
I was gonna say Alex, but no, Allie.
Well, she goes as Alex too for some people, so that's right. You know, I think one thing that's really important, and that's very hard because we all are very, we're kind of gravitating towards what we know and what is comfortable. And so we tend to hire people that are like us. And so I really try to be mindful about getting somebody on board who is different and has maybe a different style of working and a different perspective, a different background. But there needs to be some, you know, common passion too, because I don't think that it works if one person is super into it and the other person is like kind of related. So it was really important to me to find someone who is interested in a plant-based food space, not necessarily has to be vegan or plant-based, but somebody who shares that passion, has that vision, who sees that that is the way the world is moving towards. Right. And then I was looking for somebody who had food and beverage experience. And actually, interestingly, when I was at Human Ventures, they had this guy on a team who was called the Shrink for Entrepreneurs. And he made all of us go through a personality test called the Big Five. And that was really interesting because a lot of that is soft skills and ways of working and operating and thinking and strength and weaknesses. And I kind of knew how I scored on it. And then I was like, okay, I need to find somebody who can compliment me in that way. And I remember when I met Allie for the first time, we had coffee on a random Saturday morning after her yoga class somewhere in downtown Manhattan. And when I was meeting her, I was like, oh my God, in my head, I was like, wait, I'm sure she's like gonna rank really complimentary on this test, because I could tell I was kind of looking out for some of these things and I could tell how, you know, that could really work out. And so she ended up taking the test and it was super complimentary. So I think that was also a reason for us to, you know, say it's going to work, because we are different, but we fit like a little bit like a puzzle, piece. So it's very exciting. I feel very lucky that I met her.
That's awesome. And I think it's very important. I would put it up above everything else, that your co-founder shares the same passion. Because as what you mentioned, if they're not passionate, it's gonna feel like a chore, it's gonna feel like work.
Yes. Right?
Things are not gonna click, they're not gonna sync, and you don't need that friction.
I think especially at the early stages, you know, because it's such a grind, like it's so every day you know, put on a fresh suit and you show up again and you do it again. And it's such a roller coaster. And especially what happened last year, a lot of things can be asked into question when there's such disruption and collective trauma that people go through, like the pandemic. And so having somebody who has the same reason for why they are doing this is really great, because it's kind of keeps you, it just keeps you going, especially at the early stages when there's so much unknown and just a lot of, you know, having to show up every day and do it again.
Exactly. I do have a question around, how did you figure it out the right combination of ingredients? And I'll use my wife as an example. There's no bar in the world that she will eat, because she thinks all the bars are just not that tasty.
Right.
And the texture. How do you figure it out, you know, the right combination for the flavor, the ingredients, the texture? What kind of feedback do you get when you did the testings? Because I've heard from other founders, entrepreneurs in the D2C space that takes a lot of testing, right? And lots of feedback. Because most likely you might not get it right the first time. So I just wanted to ask about what was that process like for you?
So I would say, I totally agree. You might not get it right the first time, and it's going to be a constant iteration. And the testing that you do before you launch with, you know, your target consumer group is also different than when your product is in market and is being sold. So you will continuously learn. And that's one thing that's harder with a food startup. You know, having spent my time working in software companies, iterations can happen really quickly. With food, it takes a little bit more time. And once the product is on the shelf, like, you need some time to make changes. But one thing I should say is, my first job, I spent a lot of time with chefs. And I learned a lot about kind of how to create basic flavor combinations that taste good and what the things are to add. So I developed a prototypes of the first flavors myself. And then we found a co-manufacturing partner, and they have a lot of experience too. And so they added their expertise, and then we started scaling the recipe. And I had kind of, you know, the goals around texture. We wanted it to feel and taste like real food. Mm-hmm. So not like a paste, but we really want it to be recognizable. So you can see, you know, the almond pieces in the almond bar, the cacao nibs, you can even see some of the lupini bean in it. So we wanted that. That was really important because we were selling, we're on a mission to sell real food to people. So it needs mm-hmm. to look like that as well. And then a lot of the feedback we've actually gotten since we were in market last year, which it's kind of a blessing in disguise that we had to refocus our attention from retail to D2C, because we get this direct feedback loop from our customers in that way. We get reviews, we get emails. Some people write really long emails. They're very and it's awesome because it really helps us to inform how we can adjust the product and make it better and even more delicious. And so we've taken a lot of that input already and are working right now on kind of 2.0 version of Loopy and some recipe updates. And we also put the product in new packaging. So that will launch in July or in August of this year. So a lot of the feedback is coming in now that we are in market, because it's, mm-hmm. it's as I said, it's different pre-launch when you do some of that consumer research.
Yeah, that's a very important point. You launch it and then you get the feedback. And something that you mentioned too is how that experience working with chefs was setting you up for Loopy, right? And sometimes it sounds very cliche, right? Because there's this quote by Steve Jobs that you cannot connect the dots until you look backwards.
Yeah.
But it's true, right? Like those experiences were setting you up for Loopy. And I think familiarity, as what you've mentioned, it's important when creating these type of products, right? The direct to consumer, because they're already familiar with bars. So it's like, here, you know, try it out. You already know what a bar is.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think it's brilliant. So the pandemic hits, and then what happens? Like what was your thought process, your strategy to reconfigure, to re-steer the ship in the right direction?
Yeah. So it was super scary at first because mm-hmm. nobody knew in March what was going on. I remember Ali was out in California just like the week before the city, or 2 weeks before the city shut down, and she was at this big food convention show that ended up being canceled, Expo West. And so we were like, wow, this is serious. And then the city shut down and all of our retail accounts, we had gotten into about 80 within the first 2 months of launching, just totally dried up. And we were in this Pilates yoga chain and they closed their doors. And then we had just started onboarding with a large distributor and that all came to a halt. They were like, we're just putting everything on hold. We don't know how long it's going to take. So it's really scary. And I think what was scary is, you know, overcoming hard challenges is not unknown to me from a personal matter. I've gone through that before, you know, as a kid with some family stuff. And, but it felt very different this time because we were all collectively in the same situation and nobody knew what was going on and what was going to happen. So we took about a month or so to kind of re-strategize, and it became super clear the only path that we had during the pandemic was going direct to consumer. And so we set up the infrastructure for that. We had to move our boxes that we had in our office. We moved them into our apartments. We realized pretty quickly we can't be doing this from our Brooklyn apartments and fulfilling product from here. So we started working with a fulfillment company, a third party fulfillment company. So we set up that infrastructure, and then we started really promoting the website maybe in June or so. So it took us a little bit of time to get things up and running. And we started seeing really exciting, great traction over the summer. We've had a lot of really great influencer partnerships that helped us, got some great press. So we were able to just continue growing the business in that way, instead of saying, let's pause and wait until retail opens up again. Mm-hmm. So the benefits are obviously the learning that we had, but also the fact that we now have data, we have consumers. So now when we go to retailers, we can say, look, we have successfully sold this product. There are consumers who love it and come back and want more. And there's actually consumers who are requesting this to be in retail because now that things are opening up again, it is more convenient for some people to shop in retail because they already go there for their groceries. But I won't lie, it was a really tough year because the bar category was down 30 to 40%. Mm-hmm. So while most other food categories, you know, grew and exploded, bars were down because consumer behavior shifted and people weren't on the go anymore. And so trying to launch in a crowded category in a year where the category is dramatically hit, it's hard. And there's a lot of moments where you're like, what am I doing here? Fighting against windmills.
But,
you know, we came out stronger on the other side and we have now onboarded with two distributors and a really amazing broker and are just launching our first chain account last week in Seattle. So there's progress and there's things happening, which is exciting to see, you know, coming out on the other side.
I love it. I'm inspired by listening to your story because it was scary back in March, not knowing what was going on and things shutting down. And despite that, you persevered and you used your creativity and your passion to continue moving forward. And we had no other choice, right? But to continue.
Right. Totally.
Now, in terms of, there are a couple things here that I want to unpack because I know that members in the audience might find interesting, the influencers, and I also want to talk about your crowdfunding campaign in Republic. What was your process to decide, hey, we're gonna go after this type of influencer, and with the crowdfunding campaign, why did you decide that, hey, we're gonna do a crowdfunding with Republic?
Yeah, totally. So let me start with influencers. So, we realized pretty quickly, Loopy, if we're selling it online, it needs additional education because people can't, you know, in a store, you can pick it up, you can turn it around, you can look at it, you can often try it because brand sample product in store. But when we do it online, we need a platform to educate. And so we started researching influencers and found that YouTube was a great channel for us because the influencer typically has a little bit more time to talk about the product and share their personal opinion and educate a little bit around the ingredient. And so it was an amazing brand awareness channel for us and an amazing way also to convert customers and getting to try the product, which is really great. And as a matter of fact, two of the influencers that we worked with last year have come on board as investors in the business, which is super exciting because they're incredible people, very much mission aligned. And it's awesome to have them, you know, part of our journey. And that ties into the Republic crowdfunding campaign. So we have raised previously from established VCs. We have raised from angels. We have some influencer investors, but we found that the Republic platform was an opportunity to bring our customers on board as well. And the challenge with fundraising or with getting access to investing in companies is really the fact that a lot of times minimum check sizes are huge and the average person cannot be part of a privately owned company like Loopy in the early stages. And so a lot of these companies like ours are more and more mission driven and impact driven. And having built this business over the last year and a half, a lot with our customers directly last year who are supporting us during the pandemic, we feel that it's exciting for us to give them the opportunity to continue being part of our growth and benefit from it financially down the road. And so that's why Republic is amazing because it gives access to our community, to our customers, friends, and family at a very low dollar amount. $150 is the minimum investment amount to be part of Loopy's growth journey. And so it's really aligned with just how we think about access in general, not just when it comes to access to healthy, better for you, plant-based foods, but also access to being part of our journey and being able to grow with us as a small business.
Yeah, I really love the concept of Republic as a platform to democratize
Yes.
Access to investing in the startups and the companies that you believe in.
Right. Right.
I have like three investments there, but you know, I want to keep doing more. And Loopy is definitely going to be one of those companies because I believe in what you guys are doing, you know, and the impact that you're having. Now, the Republic campaign has been very successful for you guys. What were some of the things that you did, like tactical level things that you did to ensure that this was successful? Like, you know, did you email your newsletter subscribers, or what were some of the things that you think have contributed to exceeding your fundraising goals?
Yeah, I think it is a lot of different things that are helping to move the needle. So the fact that we have even a large newsletter list because of the strong consumer business that we've built last year is great, because now we have a channel to communicate with them. We noticed that investing requires a lot of education too. A lot of people don't know what it means to invest in Republic. They're like, is this a donation? And we're like, no, this is an investment. This is hopefully going to grow for you and be more beneficial on the other side. So it requires education, which you can do through email, and us regularly emailing our customers and educating them about it is really important. On social media, we do the same thing on Instagram. You know, we've gotten some really great press over the last few months. We actually landed a New York Times article, both in the digital version and in the Sunday business section, the printed version in May, which is incredible. And we're super excited about it, and obviously helps to create awareness about Loopy. It didn't talk directly about the Republic platform, but people who then research, you know, will find out about that as well. Keeping on the Republic platform, there's a way to send updates, and we try to do that once a week, you know, because there's a million things happening at Loopy. We also want to make sure that we communicate that and show the
problem. I love that.
Yeah, and also show things that might not be working, because let's not kid ourselves, you know, we're building a business from scratch. There's challenges and obstacles all the time. So being transparent, I think, is the other piece. Just being honest with our customers, and we're very transparent, you know, platform itself is very transparent. You can see a lot of details about the business, and then our pitch is very open and transparent as well. People can ask questions. We respond really quickly to them because we want to build a business that is trustworthy. And so I think that's an important part as well.
I love it. I have like goosebumps because I'm all about transparency and being honest, and just having that line of communication with your customer base. I think it's critical.
Right.
Now you mentioned that you have pitched Loopy to different investors. What was that experience like? You know, what were some of the key learnings from pitching Loopy, and what was the most challenging for you?
Yeah. So we did a lot of pitching last year, actually, which there's pros and cons during a pandemic. I think the pro is we've gotten a lot of investor interest. You know, a lot of people understand what we're trying to do with Loopy. They see the plant-based macro trend that's happening. They see companies like Oatly, you know, really bringing plant-based onto people's radar. So the interest is there, and we got a lot of meetings. I think what's harder doing it during a pandemic is that when you have a Zoom meeting, it's very different than when you shake someone's hand and there's a little less commitment, it seems like. So that's just one thing to keep in mind. What we've learned a lot is, you know, Ali and I are very detail-oriented. We are very transparent. And we've learned that sometimes it's important to also tell the bigger vision story and what we're trying to be doing with Loopy in general versus getting too lost in the details of the business. And we understand the business so well because we're in it every single day and we know every single part of it. But especially at these early stages, you know, as an investor, you're really investing in Ali and me first, and you're investing in the vision that we have. And the vision for Loopy is to build that platform for the ingredients. So we're not a bar company, we're a Lupini bean company, and we make delicious, nutritious, sustainable snacks and foods out of Lupini beans. And really stop telling that bigger vision is something that we've learned over the last few months when talking to investors.
Now, in your journey so far in building Lupi, what have been some of the things that have not worked? Some of the failures and some of the key lessons that you've learned from those failures?
Yeah, I mean, failures, I think last year was obviously kind of a curveball. So that was very challenging. What that taught us really is to always diversify, mm-hmm. not that everything on one channel, even though now we're going after retail, we still have to build an online business. We still are selling on Amazon and on some other online platforms. So just diversifying is really important. Just a good reminder that, you can't put all of your bets on one horse. So I think that's one of the big learnings. There's so many little things that go wrong, or can go wrong. Last year is very funny. We started growing really quickly and then we were dealing with crazy delays on the USPS and UPS side for online orders. So I remember in August, we had a record month, but a lot of our customers were angry with us because orders were so delayed. And so we now had to deal again with externalities that weren't really in our control, but really managing this experience. So instead of just blowing customers off or just, waiting or blaming USPS for it, we wrote to every single customer and apologized because we felt bad that they had to wait for Lupi for longer, even if some of it was out of our hands. We're there. We're like, your feelings are valid. We're frustrated too. We'll try to get product to you as soon as we can. We processed refunds if customers were angry. So again, really building a customer forward business, even when there are some things that are affecting the business that are out of your control, was one of the really big learnings for us.
It makes people want to trust you even more when you're honest about things outside of your control, and you do your best to mitigate, right, that effect. And it's about doing things that don't scale, right? I'm a big fan of that, especially in startups in the early stages, and messaging every single customer, right? That's something that doesn't scale, but it's important because people feel like, oh, they care about me.
I'm treating my customers how I would like to be treated. And if I'm asking you and I'm ordering these bars that I've never tried and spending, $30 on it, I want to know what's happening. I'm not getting them within 2 weeks. So I'm with you. I think that's really important. And as you said, at the early stage, these are our early believers. These are the people that we want to have on board. These are the people that are willing to take the risk with us. So we want to reward them extra, for the fact that they are there and helping and supporting us through those times.
What advice would you have for women in that are either on their entrepreneurial journey or considering getting started in that entrepreneurial journey? What advice would you have for them?
Yeah, it's a tough question. I think one thing is important is to go into it open-minded, with an open mind, and be informed. What is it? The stats is like 2% of venture money goes to women. That is true even in 2021. And so I think that is something to just be conscious about and not take it personal, actually, but just be conscious about that. I read this super interesting study about how investors skim through decks of women-owned versus men-owned companies, and they spend way more time, let's say the company is in similar stage, early stage, spend way more time on the slides about finances and strategy when it comes to the women-owned companies, and they spend way more time on the slides about vision when it comes to the men, the male-owned companies. And that's really interesting. That is data that was actually released by a company that creates a platform to send decks online. So they have the data.
That's interesting.
And it's kind of one, it's infuriating in many ways, but it's also important to go into that with an open mind and know that. So That's one of my big advice pieces that I have. And then just, you know, finding allies, men and women. We have some incredible male investors and advisors that have been nothing but supportive and that are very aware about of the biases that are out there. So finding allies, finding a great co-founder, man or woman, who you can build the business with. I think that's the biggest advice I have for female founders.
That's so important, finding allies. And the thing about finding allies is that you start doing the work, and then along the way you will attract, because when you start doing the work, it's you're sending signals into the world.
Right.
And the reason I'm saying this is because a lot of times I get people like, oh, I don't have any allies, or no one wants to do this project with me. And then I'm like, well, how have you started doing anything, or, you know, being vocal about it? And like, oh no, well, how you expect to attract, right? If you're not putting in the work yourself.
Totally.
It's so important. Awesome. So what is the overall vision that I have for Loopy? You know, the 3 to 5 year vision.
Yeah, we really want to build a brand platform for this ingredient. So we launched with bars. We're already working on some other products in the snack space. It's a very versatile ingredient, so it can be, you know, used in a lot of different applications. We want to be the brand that's associated with Lupini beans and their power, both on the health side, but also on the environmental side. We talked very little about that, but Lupini is used in regenerative agriculture. It's a very sustainable crop to grow. It requires very little water and resources. So it's a true alternative to a lot of the animal protein that's out there and some of the other plant-based protein. It's just so much more sustainable. So working with local farmers actually here in the States to start growing the ingredient locally. And there's a lot of excitement in the farming community. So we want to really close the circle here and build the brand, but also build a supply chain that is healthy and sustainable with local partners. That's the vision for Loopy.
I love it. And after this interview, I'm going to go into a research hole about Lupini bean.
Please.
I found it so interesting. I had no idea that it existed. And I grew up watching Dragon Ball Z. And in that cartoon, there's this bean. Uh-huh. I forget the name of it. I think it's called Zenzo bean. But this bean is a power bean that if you eat it, uh-huh. it restores your energy, and it doesn't matter what you've been doing if you're tired. So it reminded me of that.
So cool. Now I have to watch Dragon Ball Z. How did I not do that also before? But I'm sure they were inspired by Loopy or by Loopy bean.
I bet so. Yeah, like if you go to YouTube, you should look like Dragon Ball Z bean, and I'm sure something will come up. Anyways, one last question for you, Isabel, before we wrap this up. What are some of the trends in the industry that you're paying attention to, that you're excited outside of the Lupini bean, of course?
The general macro trend, the plant-based trend, is obviously very interesting to me. But within that, what I see a lot is a lot more brands that are making simpler products that are not only delicious, but also good for your health. So that have really clean, and I actually don't like that word clean, but really simple ingredient labels that are made out of whole foods. And I see that across categories. You know, I see that in food, but also in beverage. There's some really exciting companies that are making better for you sodas and better for you drinks, sparkle drinks, sparkling teas, like the company Minna that makes this amazing sparkling tea that I love. So I think there's a lot of going back to the simple ways and really hearing the real foods that you can find in nature. And that's super exciting for me.
I love it. And when you're not building a company, you know, what are some of the things that you're into?
I'm really into running. My husband actually got me into that. I was very reluctant, let's say traditional European, not really believing in working out until I'm and I've been super into that. So unfortunately during the pandemic, I haven't been training for races, but I've continued running. And I I'm about to sign up for another half marathon, probably in fall, because now events are happening again. So that's one of the things that I love doing. And I find a lot of analogy between running, training for races, and building a business, because, you know, it's really not about the race itself at the end. It's really about the process. And I sometimes tend to rush and want to be at the race, but really what I've been learning through building this business and through running is it matters that you show up every day and chip away at it. And some days suck and are horrible, and you're not, your time is totally off. And like this morning is so humid out when I went on my run, but over time, it all builds on top of each other. And I think that's the same with running and training as it is for building a business. So it's taught me a lot about how to build Loopy.
I agree with you. I've done 3 or 4 half marathons. I've done a couple of Spartan races. And more than the physical aspect, what I love about doing this type of events is that it challenges me mentally.
Totally.
Just when I think I cannot go anymore, like I can actually, I just gotta keep pushing it. So yeah, I mean, I could talk about this for another hour. Where can people, what is the best way for people to follow Loopy or follow your journey?
Yeah, you can check out our website, getloopy.com, and you can sign up for our newsletter. We send out newsletters once a week. And then you can also follow us on Instagram at getloopy. And those are the two best ways to stay in touch and learn more about us and find out about some of the exciting new flavors and products that we'll be launching over the next few months.
Awesome. Well, Isabel, thank you so much for coming on the Ivy Podcast and sharing your journey building Loopy and just making a positive impact in the world. I'm really looking forward to having you on another episode, maybe down the road, to get more updates about your journey. But for now, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.